Residents, when you're looking for your job, remember, you're in control. Make sure you hit up Provider Solutions and Development. They are the experts in holistic career coaching with exclusive access to hundreds of jobs nationwide. Hit them up at info.psdconnect.org/docs-outside-the-box. This episode is brought to you by Set for Life Insurance. Listen, docs, one of the first steps we took to pay off our student loan debt was realizing we paid way too much for our disability insurance. That all changed when we found Set for Life Insurance. They helped us with a customized insurance policy that met our needs and, most of all, budget. To learn more, check out setforlifeinsurance.com. What's good, everyone? I got Dr. Nina Loom. I think the IMG guru. Like, what is the name? What do you go by? Come on, hook it up.
IMG coach.
That's it? You got to do something more. You got to be like the IMG guru or the IMG duru or something like that.
I need to find like a cliche, you know, title for it.
You should. No, yeah. But IMG coach is good. But listen, sis, I feel good that you're on the show because you just been swerving me. You just been, you know, giving me the Heisman for so long. Like, when you gonna come on my show, you're like, nah, I'm not ready. I'm not coming on your show. It took you like 4 months.
It did. Procrastination, which is like the enemy, is what happened.
Nah, but here you wasn't procrastinating. You was like, I wasn't that important. I'm not ready.
It's procrastination. But like I said, this is probably one of the biggest opportunities for me as a, you know, newly minted podcaster as well to be on your show. I'm like, why not take it? Right. Because I mean, I learned everything I know from your podcast and your book. So here we are. I'm just excited to be here. Tell all the people listening. Especially physicians, we have a lot we could talk about in the podcast, and they need to come to you for that information.
Thank you. See, that's why I have you on this show. You know what I'm saying? You need to be my co-host. Forget Dr. Renee. You know what I'm saying?
And I'm keeping it real out here, you know.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, like you keeping it real. You telling 100. People about the show. Like, that's what I'm talking about, yo.
Yeah. Dang. I mean, people want to know, like, how do people do stuff? Learn from people who've done it. Like, it's easy. Right. You know, you want to be your doctor. You want to have a podcast. You want to know how to do it? Well, talk to someone who's done it and done it well. It's really that easy.
So listen, you are doing multiple things well. First of all, congratulations on getting engaged.
Thank you.
I know that's a big deal. That's huge.
That's exciting.
I'm going to put you on a spot. When are you going to pick your wedding date? Come on, sis.
Lord, so I haven't yet picked a date because, you know, I'm from Cameroon and like there's so many parts to a wedding. So we have to do the traditional thing first because that's the real wedding, right? And then everything else is whitewashed.
Got you. Okay.
So, you know, we have to pick that first and I have to wait for my mom to get a visa. And with everything going on, we're just kind of like walking like snails, just waiting for that moment to happen so she can be here. Yeah.
Got you. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I haven't picked a date yet, but I will soon. And it'll be all over social. So don't worry.
And then I see you blowing up with your podcast now. Like, what's going on? Like, you are like the person for IMGs now. What's up with that?
Yeah, so I may have to change my title to the IMG guru, like you said. I actually like that.
No, the IMG duru.
Duru. Yeah. Okay. I'll have to look it up because I'm not sure what that means. But yeah, so I started the IMG Roma podcast, which is the only place where IMGs get empowerment, encouragement, and they can get information as to what they need to do in order to prepare for US residency. So it's been amazing. I literally started it about a year and 6 months ago, and it's been downloaded tens of thousands of times at this point. I lost track of even trying to count.
I'm lying. That's a counter right behind you that has the number. Why are you lying? Don't listen to her, everyone. She keeps track of our download numbers. She lying.
I know. I do keep track, but recently I've just been like, I know it's working. I know it's working. So I don't follow the numbers anymore because I'm like, it's working. People are downloading it. I know it's working. So it's really a delight. It's on Apple, Spotify, Google.
Look at that. Look at you. You know everywhere it is at though. Look at you.
Yeah. Oh, I do. And I host it on Anchor for those who
are look at you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So I'm really proud of that. And you got some courses out there for IMGs. So look, sis, before we get into like too much, tell us about your arc. Tell us where you're from. Tell us what school you graduated from, because I'm trying to figure out why you care so much about IMGs. Let's get into this.
So, you know, it all starts with where I'm from. I'm from Cameroon in West Africa, and I did all my education there.
Joel Embiid is from Cameroon. Yeah, I used to have a dope soccer team.
the guy, the UFC guy, the new guy. I forget. I just forgot his name.
Ngannou?
Yeah. Ngannou, yeah. Yeah. The UFC winner, champion. I didn't know about him until he won, but I claim him, you know. But most people know about Eto'o Feast, the football player, soccer player, pretty big guy, Roger Milla.
Okay,
these are all soccer heroes. Okay. These are like the people that run the soccer world. But anywho, that's where I'm from and spent all my life there right up until I was 18 and wanted to go to medical school, wanted to be a doctor like everybody, like you, right? Like everybody, most people listen to the show can relate to this. Mm-hmm. Did apply into medical school there, did not get in, but not because I didn't make it, but just because of some other issues, which are more, you know, sort of issues related to the way our government is set up. Had to find other options.
Heard that story before.
Yeah, I had to find other options. Mm-hmm. I was enrolled in university back home. So that's undergraduate studies in life sciences. Did not enjoy it. Knew I wanted to do medicine. So started looking outside of the country. Looked at Nigeria, looked at South Africa, looked at Europe, specifically England, Belgium, Italy. And then looked at the Caribbean. And I actually fell in the Caribbean it was really God-given, but a mistake on the internet. And through all those different places I applied into and searched, I found a school in the Caribbean that was willing to accept my credits from my undergraduate studies in Cameroon. And so I didn't even know, to be honest, I did not know that the Caribbean schools were part of this U.S. system in the sense that they were mimicking the U.S. system and training majority of Americans to go back to the States to practice. To me, it was just a way out to get a medical degree and go back to Cameroon to practice. Mm. So I left from Cameroon and went into Curaçao. It's a small island in the Netherlands, Antilles. And I started out in a pre-medicine track at St. Martinus University. Completed that and
matriculated. Wait, slow down. So when you say pre-medicine track, I thought it was a medical school.
So because I was not from a U.S. school, mm-hmm. they wanted me to do certain prerequisites in order to get into their medical school.
So like a post-bac almost.
I guess that would be the equivalent. Yeah.
Okay. Got you.
And so I had to take certain courses as part of their pre-medical track in order to become a medical student there at their institution. So I started off with the pre-medicine track. And then upon completing that, I was able to get into their medical school system. And while I was there, I met other American students who had come from the States to complete medical school on the island. And they're all like, you know, oh, this is a thing. Like Americans leave the States and go down to the Caribbean for medical school and then go back for training in the U.S. and eventually practice. And through that, just learning from other students, I was like, well, I mean, if I can go there and get the postgraduate training that I need to practice, why not? And that's really how all of this started. But I thought it was just going to be as easy as it was for one, my American counterparts that were in school with me. And then two, when I moved here, I thought it was just going to be as easy as someone that was a doctor from a medical school in the States because you have a medical degree, but it was not.
When did you find out that this was not as easy as you thought the second option was going to be?
So I found this out probably at the end of second year of medical school when I had to actually move to the States it was probably the second time I was in the States for a Kaplan course. It was a Kaplan review course for step one. Mm-hmm. And I came in as a foreign student on an F-1 visa in Atlanta. And we were in this.
Did you say, how did your accent just change? Did you say Atlanta or did you say Atlanta? Because you sounded real Atlanta. You sounded like you're from Atlanta. You said Atlanta.
because I spent a lot of time in Atlanta. So I like have to say it right.
So if people know, you don't say the T. If you're from Atlanta, you don't say the T. Atlanta.
Oh, right? Really?
Atlanta.
I didn't even know that. I didn't know it was an Atlanta thing. It was Atlanta. Just like. Mm-hmm. It was just part of the story.
Hey, aren't you tired of someone telling you what to do in residency? Like what time to be at the hospital? When you can leave? For some reason, you're always wondering when you're going to get a golden weekend? Hey, look, now is the time for you to take control. When it's time to start looking for your job, make sure you hit up our sponsor, Provider Solutions and Development. They are the experts in holistic career coaching with exclusive access to hundreds of jobs nationwide. Now look, we rock with them here at Docs Outside the Box because they empower docs just like you to one, find a place you really want to be at. And number two, start making decisions with you at the center. How's that for a change? Whatever you're ready for next, they'll help you find it with no quotas, no commissions to get in the way. So look, start flexing those control muscles and hit them up at info.psdconnect.org/docs-outside-the-box.
So that's really how I found myself in the States, was as an F1 student to take step one. Okay. And by way of taking this USMLE course. And then I started to just be exposed to stuff on the internet, meeting other students who were from just different medical schools across the world. You had, I mean, in my group, in that Kaplan program, we were all from like just different countries. It was, I mean, it was like the United Nations. And listening to everybody's struggles, I was like, whoa, this is not as straightforward. It's just not checklist, 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 do this, and get in. It's like, oh, your scores matter. And then your specialty is going to matter. And then you need a visa. That's going to be an issue. How have you been thinking through the process? You have a mentor who's writing your letter. Like, there were just so many things just popping out from talking to other people. And I was like, oh, shoot. I got myself into something that's going to be really hard.
Is that what you really said? You really said shoot? Is that what you really said?
No. It wasn't shoot. It was like, oh, my God.
Is that what... So he's like, yo, this is not what I expected.
This is not what I signed up for. It's not, you're just going to get in. Like, you just don't get in. Like,
it's more than just merit.
It's more than just that. And so that's really where it started out for me. And then I took step one, and my school was arranging our clinicals here in the States. So I was already here and had to transition from my student status to a visitor status. So the visa part is like a whole ball game, which if you know nothing about immigration, it's the worst part of it all to start with. And then
that's what I hear.
Yeah. When you add that layer to that, to everything else you have to deal with, studying for boards, preparing for that and maneuvering your clinicals, and you're thrown out to these hospitals that don't have structure. Nobody's planning your clinical years out for your individual success. And that's really where it hit me, because there was just no guidance and you're kind of on your own. So, I mean, that was my biggest pain point, was dealing and planning my life on my own without any guidance, having to deal with the visa issue and not knowing what the heck I was doing, really is the honest truth.
Okay. All right. But you did it though. You figured it out. So how did you figure it out? You ended up going into family medicine. Talk to us about that route. How did you do all that?
Yeah. So, you know, people ask all the time, why did you choose family medicine? And the truth is, I didn't really plan it out like that. And one of the reasons why, I'll digress, but I'll say one of the reasons why I do what I do today is because I heard a lot of bad advice. And I heard a lot of negative talk when it came to IMGs. Because what happens is you come into the country and you're inundated with the forums and the discussion boards. And you...
Student Doctor Network and all these things.
Right. Student Doctor Network. Reddit and Student Doctor Network are like the demons of international medical graduates. Just don't go to those websites if you're listening. So... I was like soaking up all this information. And in the process, I'm like, oh, well, the easiest thing to do is to go into primary care, because that's what the forums say to do if you want to secure your spot.
Is that what you wanted to do though?
Well, I was just happy to be a physician. I was just happy to help people no matter how I did it. But that was what I thought I was supposed to do.
I got you. I see where this is going.
Yeah, I'm happy with it now, because maybe that's what God had for me to do. And I just didn't know that. But I wanted to be a pediatrician to start out with, because my mom's a pediatrician. But then I thought, you know, well, if family medicine is a guarantee, why not go into it? Which is a wrong mindset. And that, I tell my students this all the time, is a wrong mindset to approach any specialty. You should be going for the thing that you are passionate about and the things that you want to do. But long story short, I transitioned into family medicine based on what I was reading on the internet. And then I did a family medicine rotation, and I just happened to have a residency program associated with that. And I fell in love with it. And I thought, you know, this is something I can do. I saw myself being able to practice in that and enjoying it. And so I stuck with it.
And this is in Kentucky?
Yes, in Kentucky. I graduated from the rural training track of the University of Kentucky, which was actually a really fine place to train for family med, because it was unopposed. You know, you see a lot of diverse illnesses, and you're kind of like the only doctor in the town with your co-residents and your attendings. You get to see more than maybe a family medicine out of an urban opposed program. So there was some advantages to that.
Probably.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So how did the whole process of becoming a resource for IMGs, when did that start?
So that was probably 2016, after graduating residency in 2015. I started a blog on WordPress. actually the first day of intern year in 2012, I started a blog on WordPress. And it was just writing about my experiences with going in as an intern and being first time in Kentucky and whatnot. And I didn't write a word until I graduated residency. And so
for 3 years, it's just holding a space for you.
Nothing. It was just the URL on the internet. And when I graduated residency, I found out I had more time. And so I started to really kind of look back at like all the lessons learned from the prior years. And I started to write more about it. And in that process, somewhere around 2016, so about a year of blogging on WordPress, I noticed people wanted to read what I was writing, especially IMGs, because nobody was giving them that kind of information. Nobody was being honest about what really happens and options and how to approach this entire process. Like no one was doing that at the time. And so it quickly grew into just me writing my thoughts into, oh my God, people are reading more of the posts when I talk about my path as an international student, more so than my personal life. And so I shifted really quickly and started writing more about what people wanted to read. And through that, Instagram came out. I don't remember when it did, but I created an account sometime around that time and started sharing there also. And before I knew it, people were getting more and more interested, especially international students, kind of really just telling me, hey, this is helping me. Can you talk about this? And that's really what I started writing about. Yeah. Mm.
I oftentimes say that like our best superpower is the ability for us to share our own story, because there's just so many different things that we've gone through that someone else can learn from. All the different potholes, the successes, all those different things, people can learn from that. So I just find it fascinating that, you know, you're finding out that people are more interested in your story as an IMG and are looking for this as an inspiration, so to speak. So when did you decide that, oh, like for real, like I need to get really serious about this? Because I remember following you, and then I remember like, uh-oh, I see she's getting really serious about this. Tell us about that transition.
I think it was probably in 2019 or 20. I don't remember the year I met you in Atlanta at that conference for Momentum in Medicine.
Dr. Nina, you're using your team again.
Atlanta. Yes. See, the real Nina is coming up. So that year, I think it was 2018 or 2019. And
I thought we spoke like in 2017 at one point though on Zoom,
yes.
Didn't we?
Yes, on Zoom. Yeah. Right. Okay, yes. Yeah. I do remember, because yeah. I took one of your free coaching. You were offering like a free coaching for, you know, 15, 20 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting on and just talking to you about all the things that I had in my head that I wanted to do with my blog and with my career, actually, and going locums at the time.
And you didn't listen to none of the advice I gave you.
I did, because I did incorporate myself.
I'm just teasing.
I did. Absolutely. I incorporated myself, but I couldn't start because I had a visa. So I had to wait until I finished. And for the last year and a half, I've been working within that business. So we can talk about that if you want. But yes, so I did take that advice. And then later that year, I think I met you in Atlanta, came back, and I was like, I need to do what he's doing, you know, with the podcast and everything. Got your book, got some of your resources, was listening in, and a few other people along the way. And I just thought, you know, I should pivot to what people really want to hear from me and what's helping them the most, to be honest, because it doesn't really make any sense to come on the internet. I don't find pleasure in talking about my personal life because it doesn't help anybody, but I find pleasure in talking about the parts of my life that actually have lessons in them that can impart somebody else's life.
And how many likes you got when you told people you got married or you were getting married? How many likes you got?
Oh my God, that was crazy. For the first time ever, I probably got like over, like, I don't even remember. Like it was like 40,000 views on that and like so many likes. People are weird. Like it's hard to tell what people are going to like or not. I was just like, you're just sharing
this real quick. It's the algorithms.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Like sharing this real quick. And then it's like, bam, it goes viral.
Hold up. Before we continue, to all my day ones, and you know each and every one of you who you are, thank you for rolling with the show from Jump. And to the new listeners, welcome. What's good? Where y'all been? I want y'all to stay a while. All right. So look, I'm trying to build a community here and I need your help. So with whatever app you're listening to this show right now, I want you to click the subscribe button. Then I want you to go over to Apple Podcasts and I want you to rate and review the show. And you may be asking, how does this help? The way how it helps is by helping the show to grow and rise up in the rankings so that it's easier for new people to discover the show. Now, what's in it for you is at least once a week, I'm going to be going through these reviews. I'm going to pick a lucky reviewer And I'm going to give that person an opportunity to have a 15-minute session with me where we could talk about anything from personal finance, getting your money right, to just shooting the you know what about the show. So listen, remember, all I need you to do is subscribe and then rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. Let's get on with the episode. Peace. Yeah, that's the part about social media that drives me nuts. It's like you never really know, unless you're living on it like 24/7, you never really know what's going to pop. Your post with your fat rock on there. Hey, post, why don't you take a moment right now to thank your fiance for that? I'm going to give you some space. Go ahead. You do you.
I know. Let's make sure he listens to this. You know, I love it. You know, it's big. It's as big as my ego. So, I mean, I can appreciate you more. I can probably appreciate you more, and I would probably do that. You know what's funny? The ring company, like the company he got the ring from, because I think I tagged them maybe in that post. They reached out to me and they're like, we want this video for our promotions. And I'm still drafting a proposal for them because I have tons more content from where that came from.
But I was like, pay? I hope you're going to make them pay.
I was like, you want this? Yeah. They're like, oh yeah, please reach out to us and let's talk some more about your video. I was like, sure. So that's something that hopefully they accept my proposal and I can do some work with them.
Okay. So obviously I've been watching your social media moves. And one of the things that I definitely noticed is the specific information with your podcast and with your posts that you are putting out there for IMG. So I want to ask you, like, first, tell me what the issues are with IMGs coming to the United States. And then after that, were there issues from during the previous president's administration? Because I know they made it really difficult to get visas, and has it gotten better now?
Twofold. Currently in the United States, you have about 22% of practicing physicians that are international medical graduates. And this includes both U.S. born persons who went away to study and came back to practice and non-U.S. born people who have moved into the country as physicians. Yeah, so that's and it's the highest it's been. Within the last year, 2020 was the best match ever for international medical graduates. About 60% of IMGs who applied matched into residency. This past year in 2021, it was a little bit of a dip. It was 59%, but it's because of a change in the numerator. So just, it's still the same, in my opinion. About 60% of IMGs in the last 2 years have gotten into residency positions. It's the best that it has been ever. I start with saying that to say that IMGs are catching on. Like, we are finally coming around to learn what it takes to be more competitive, because for us, we have to be a little bit better in order to get into residency. We don't have a dean that's going to call somebody for us, or a mentor or a sponsor. We don't have the privilege of having a letterhead from University of such and such that can speak for us. You know, some medical schools, just by the name alone, right? We give them respect. So we don't have those added subconscious advantages. And then you maybe add a layer of visa applications and permanent residency status. There are so many programs across the country that do not even sponsor visas. So visa applicants don't stand a chance there either. And then you add the layer of financial issues that I'm just likely to face. Financial aid is rarely ever an option. And so that makes it to where most people are working to pay for school. And therefore, there are pauses in their educational pathway, and that makes them less competitive.
And just to be clear, when you say financial aid, you're primarily talking about their ability to get loans, right? Like, they can't even get loans.
Right. Yes, correct.
That's a problem.
And that's a problem, right. That's a problem because they can't even get loans from U.S.-based institutions, even for those that are U.S.-based persons, so U.S. citizens or permanent residents. So they're having a harder time. Some U.S. citizens end up getting loans by maybe enrolling in online master's degree programs simultaneous with their medical education, which adds to the burden of studying as a student just to be able to secure the medical school portion of that loan. And so there's just so many nuances like that. I mean, then you go into dealing with maybe the subconscious bias that could exist within our academic institutions as a whole, because we come from a very traditional system in medicine where certain things are looked at for face value. There's no in between. There's no gray zone. You know, you either have a 250 or you don't. You either come from Yale, Harvard, or whatever, or you don't. You either have an MD or a DO or you don't. You know, there's no gray areas. And so you have IMGs who are coming in who don't fit. And therefore, they're easily cast away because they don't have that extra layer of saying, well, I don't have these things, but look, I have such and such, or I could do well on my exam, but I don't have a letter writer. I don't have somebody to proofread my personal statement. And so they write an essay that looks like something for a high school student, not realizing that maybe your personal statement for residency application is not your medical school application. It's not the same kind of personal statement. You know, you're supposed to be specialty specific. You're supposed to speak to another physician from the standpoint of a physician. And so there's just so many nuances like that. And nobody's teaching IMGs these things. And I think one of the key values is also the mindset. They're coming in with, you know, the perception of Student Doctor Network or Reddit threads or Twitter thread. But Twitter is actually good. Med Twitter is actually good for IMGs. But Reddit, Student Doctor Network, and some of the other forums are just the worst things that IMGs can inundate themselves with. And then they do.
Is it bad advice? Because I know Student Doctor Network has always just been known to be like really malignant, just in whatever information is out there. But it's up until recently, I just knew about Reddit had a threat. I didn't even know Reddit did anything medically related for like actual like students, residents, and doctors.
Yes. So there are Reddit threads that are good. If you get on Reddit, you can find threads that have maybe information, or they'll have an Excel spreadsheet during interview season talking about experiences of different programs. There are some threads that are good. There are other threads where you have an IMG that could pose a question. And I'm just typically, because of all this information, we are seeking for help. And so we go to these forums and say, what do you think my chances of matching? And maybe put their stats on there, whatever they think their stats are. And every single time you read down those comments, it's always, you don't stand a chance. You need to have this that you don't have. And yes and no, it's not always straightforward. And that's why coaching comes into play, because it's not always just black and white. There's no checklist to say you're going to make it and you're not going to, because there are other things in the picture that you can attain to make yourself better.
So you basically just, in a whole nutshell, like the United States system is very arrogant, you know? And for me, I just remember being a resident down in Atlanta. I did my residency at Grady with Morehouse. Mm-hmm. And I just remember there were occasions where I just saw things that were completely heartbreaking. Like I remember there was a janitor there mopping the floors, and I just happened to just pick up a conversation with him. And he told me he was a physician in his country in Europe. And because of all the challenges and the hurdles it took to kind of come to the United States, just in terms of immigration, and then to deal with trying to become a physician, he just didn't want to deal with it, or he couldn't deal with it, and just said, look, I just need to find a job.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, you spend your entire early adulthood learning to be like this technician on the body. And then just because literally a change of location, you can't do that anymore. There was another situation where while I was in residency, one of my co-residents, we always knew she was older, but we found out that in Japan, she was a fully trained neurosurgeon. And she had to do residency all over again in the United States, which is like 7 years deep. You know, that's crazy. It's like, why do we do that to it just doesn't make sense, particularly with all the shortages that are out there in the United States. It's, to me, is nuts.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to how traditional medicine is, to where I've thought about this in two different ways. On one hand, we want to have most things in medicine standardized for quality of care. And so we want to make sure that the people coming out or the doctors coming out are well qualified to do the work that they do, because we're dealing with human lives. As a surgeon, you probably understand that even better, because cutting somebody, make sure you got to know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And so it's important that we have that standardization, so that by the time we're graduating physicians, we can let them out to work on human bodies and be confident that we all have the same level of understanding of the human body. On the other side, could we maybe make it less stringent for certain physicians over others? So grandfathering physicians into certain things. I think that that's possible, but it's hard to standardize that process. So it's a lot easier to just push everybody into this, you know, mill, to where you can guarantee that it's going to be done a certain way, because how do you start making differentiations for, oh, maybe the one from Japan, but not the one from Cameroon or the one from Ghana, right? Because then you start running into those nuances of, yeah, you're from, you know, I don't know, the best universities in Europe, but why do you have to redo your residency training? Oh, well, you could be from the best university in West Africa. Are you going to be allowed to not redo your residency training? So there are just those nuances also, which to where I understand somewhat as to why it's important to have a standardized process with training, because it just reduces that variability of how physicians are going to end up practicing. And so I really don't fault the US for doing that, to be honest, personally. But what it has, because I think that was done maybe with good intention, but what it has turned out to be is those of us on the other side, and I say us because a lot of us end up working in institutions as, you know, maybe program liaisons or attending physicians or preceptors and clinical professors and whatnot, or become program directors for those that do. The power is in our hands. And so it's up to us to determine how we filter through, knowing fully well that someone has trained should be an advantage when reviewing an application, as opposed to just going with that umbrella of IMG, well, you need to do it over, and I'm going to consider you just like a fourth year student, because that is not true. This person has added qualifications, and maybe those added qualifications should be looked upon as added qualifications. But I think that also goes back again into what we're told about foreign medical schools and how we rank them in our subconscious mind, as to say that they're not as good as American schools. And not every school is. There are lots of great American schools, but there are some great international schools. So it's up to us to do that work to say, if this person is coming in and they have training at University of XYZ that's located in, you know, Bulgaria, maybe I should look at it as an added qualification as opposed to a negative. And that allows me to just be more open when reviewing that application to say, this, considering that, here's what I have. Should I offer them interview or something like that?
How do you find yourself working with IMGs often now? Do you find it mainly through like virtual mentoring, through like social media or through your courses? Like how are you working with them more?
So I work with them a lot more in private coaching. I do have my mentees, like students that I mentor, and then I have students that I coach for a specific period of time. And a lot of that is through my life group coaching program within the IMG roadmap. I do have free courses on there and also paid courses. So those that are within my private group get access to me, and we go through a 7-step program that I've developed. And I believe that these 7 steps answer all the questions that IMGs need to clarify their pathway and gain confidence before they apply. And based on this formula that I came up with, I'm noticing that by the time students are coming to the end of it, they have more clarity, they have more confidence, they know exactly what they should be doing as an individual, not what the threads are telling them to do, or what the forums are telling them to do, but what they should do as an individual, because each of us have individual skill sets. We come from different backgrounds. Some of us, like you said, some have practiced in subspecialties even prior to transitioning to the States. So they're unfortunately not the same as someone who came out from a Caribbean school as a fourth year, or someone who graduated from an American school as a fourth year. So I help them leverage these different parts by using the 7-step formula. And that's really helped a lot of IMGs to get just gain clarity and confidence as they approach the application process. And then now we're, you know, it's been on for about 2 years. This is my second year within the course. Was it my third? My second year within the full course, because the first year was a beta session. Now we're getting to the point where we're seeing the results in the testimonials that are coming back from PGY1s and PGY2s that are saying, hey, this actually works, as if I can focus on just my pathway and not get inundated with information on the internet and focus in on my coaching, this is how that process works for them.
Mm. Can you give us a little bit of a hint? Like take us through like one thing that you kind of help people. You know, obviously, I don't want to spill the beans on your course, but take us through like one thing that you can come off the top of your mind that you just like, yeah, a lot of IMGs mess this up.
Personal statements. I know for sure one thing, by the time they're done with the course, people are rewrite their personal statements. It's completely revamped, more focused, more competitive, compelling. They tell a better story. I help them also with addressing the idea of how to collect their letters and arranging their ERAS packet. So filling out that ERAS form and getting that packet together is another key area where you have a lot of talented people, a lot of qualified doctors who just don't know how to represent that material in a manner that when a program director is reviewing it, they know exactly what this person is talking about and they can see the talent and skill set and qualifications that this person brings to the table. So I think those are 2 key areas, but obviously, like I said, there are 7 key areas that I work within. Obviously helping them approach the whole process, their mindset. Usually I get, whenever I finish the course, that's one of the areas where everybody's like, yo, I think differently now. I approach things differently. Networking is another key area. There's just so many little areas, but those are the bigger areas, is with their application packet, their personal statements, their letters, their mindset, and their networking.
Yo, so how are you able to balance this between practicing and this huge, that's a huge undertaking that you're doing, right? From so many different formats, from social media to podcasting, to blogging, to courses. And there are a lot of people who, for the most part, are setting their dreams of practicing in the United States on you. So how do you balance this? Like, are you pulling back on one thing so that like on clinical work? Tell us about that. We want to know about that.
I guess the fortunate thing is being able to practice as a hospitalist allows for me to have that block time off,
okay,
that 1 week on, 1 week off. And okay, so I spend a lot of my week off. I cut out some days within that time where I just work on this stuff.
So there's med students who are listening. They want to know how you work. So tell us, like, explain that to them, how you work as a hospitalist.
So a hospitalist is basically a inpatient physician that provides care within set periods of time. So what that means for our listeners is, you know, my schedule looks something like a 7 a to 7 p for 7 days in a row. And then for the next 7 days, I don't have any assigned duties within a hospital or any clinical setting. And so during those next 7 days, I can focus on my rest, I can focus on my self-care, and I can focus on coaching international students.
Mm. Like I said, I think that's really impressive. So what's the next step? Because for me, I'm envisioning a like summit, maybe, you know, something even bigger than that for IMGs, where like they can come and learn about everything they need to do to get their stuff together. And just low key, I don't know if you remember, but you can remember you came on the show. I think you were like episode 160 or something like that. You were helping me answer some questions that I get. I didn't know that there was so many people listening to my show from other countries, IMGs. You know, every now and then they'll send me questions and I'll send them to you. And I'm like, look, I don't know how to answer this. I think it's worthy. These questions are worthy to be answered, but I'm not the person who should be answering these questions. But one of the things that you said is that not everyone in every country outside of the United States has access to take the USMLE 1 and USMLE 2. Like you may have to fly to a different country to take the online course. And when you mentioned that, that was just like mind-blowing as possible. I was like, dang, I didn't even think about that. Because I think you were saying like in certain African countries, you got to fly to what, South Africa or?
Or Ghana is one of them, I think. And Egypt, mm-hmm. Ghana, South Africa, the ones I know about right now.
And all the other countries in between possibly do not have like a Prometric.
Do not have a Prometric. And with the pandemic, I heard a lot of those Prometric centers were not functioning as they did prior to the pandemic. And so it adds another layer of nuance. You may have to fly to another country. Like I know people who've flown to Europe to take an exam.
That's an expensive trip.
It is. And that's the thing, like people don't understand how much it takes for someone who wants to pursue this path to actually do it. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of sacrifice. I mean, these are leaving their families, everything they know, huge financial sacrifice, huge physical sacrifice, and then even an economic sacrifice because half the time they could have been there. But we believe in the dream, right? Mm-hmm. We believe in being able to practice here. We believe in the joy, the rewards, the gains. And so I don't fault anyone for pursuing that, but it's a lot. And I think that you'll be hard pressed to find someone that's going to do all of that work and not be a serious resident or a serious physician when they do get to practice. Because
no doubt,
after investing all of that, I'm not saying that US students are not doing that work. I'm not saying that they're not working hard. I believe that they're also working very hard and they also deserve to practice in all the ways that they want to. But all I'm just saying is if you shed some light into what these doctors are doing and students are doing in order to get that same dream, they're putting in a lot of just sacrifice and giving up a lot of things.
Mm. So what's next? What's next, Dr. Loom? Come on.
So a few things.
Put you on the spot.
Yes, yes. I'm hoping to expand with the IMG Roadmap Academy, which is my online program. Hoping to get more modules and just a lot more resources to where it's, you know, self-paced and you can do it wherever you're at in the world. Like I'm going to direct you every single step remotely. I'm hoping to automate that process and allow for it to continue to just go around the world so people can do it anywhere. I'm hoping in the future, especially post-pandemic, that we do indeed have a summit. I've had a few meetups here and there, but that's all been outside of parts of the pandemic and outside of just if I'm in a city, I would, you know, pop up on Instagram and say, hey, I'm going to be here. Who wants to meet up? And you'd be surprised. People do show up and we have great conversation and that opens up for new relationships. And so I'm looking forward to that, but I would like something formal. And my dream though is really to be able to get a formal summit like that where programs can also be present. You know how you go to a medical conference and you have this exhibit hall and you have programs there that are actually seeking for applicants, they're looking for people to connect with. I wish that IMGs could be so good that programs want them like that and that they can show up to our conference and say, hey, we're here. We're IMG friendly. We sponsor visas. Here we are. That would be a dream come true. And I know it takes some time to get there. I know it's lofty and big, but I'm hopeful.
So real quick, clarify for us that the visa game, like, how does that work? Like, I know it's really in depth, but explain to me the visa you need to train. There's so many different visas, one to train, one to stay in the United States. Explain that to us real quick.
Yeah. So shameless plug. I have a free visa course. Okay.
Oh my goodness.
On IMGroadmap.com.
I was not trying to throw that as a softball to you, but I guess,
hey. Shameless plug. Anybody listening right now, no matter what country you're in, if you go to IMGroadmap.com, you can sign up for my free visa course. I've had every visa under the moon. So there is an F1 visa, and I'll tell you more about what each of these mean. A B1 visa, B1, B2, H1B, and J1. These are the four visas that any physician that's coming into the States may have to deal with. Not all, even though I had all four of them at different points in my life, but you'll have to fall into one of these at some point. I just only became a permanent resident in 2019, right before the pandemic, because there were delays and backlogs with permanent residency applications. So I was blessed to just get it right there in December of 2019. But here is what it is. The F1 visa is a student visa. And this is more for if you're coming in for an in-person program that has the ability to sponsor the student visa. So it's a learning visa. So you're coming in to learn with Kaplan, or you're coming in to learn with any of the major test prep organizations. You have a B1, B2 visa, which you can learn on online as well, or you can use it for clinical rotations. You can use it for visiting electives. And these are observerships. So you're not touching the patient. You're not hands-on because you're a visitor. So you're just watching, and you're watching to familiarize yourself with the US system. You're watching to make connections, to network, to see what programs are like, and if you really want to continue to pursue that. And then you have a J1. So the J1 and the H1B visas are the ones that are required for training. So after you've been accepted into the mat or through the match, then you're either going to have to choose between an H1B and a J1. And this is a key point for most IMGs listening.
You break it down for us. Come on.
Yeah. So the J1 is a student exchange, an alien physician / student exchange visa. The H1B is a work visa. So the J1, as you would imagine, because it's an alien physician exchange visa, most university programs, I would say all university programs that have a residency program associated with it sponsor a J1, but not all programs that have a residency program sponsor an H1B. So there are more programs with J1 spots than there are H1B spots. And the H1 being a work visa means you apply to go work in the United States as a physician, but you come in as a trainee first, after which you can extend your visa to stay and work in the States for X number of years. The J1 visa says you're going to come in and work as a trainee, an alien physician, but you're going to return to your country and work in your country for a minimum of 2 to 3 years before you're ever allowed to come back to work in the States. And so most international doctors, when they hear that, they're like, oh no, I don't want to deal with the J1 because I have to go back. Maybe that was not my intention. Or some are okay with going back because they just want the training experience and go back to their country. But the problem with that is if you don't take that J1, your chances of matching on an H1B are actually lower because there are fewer programs that do sponsor it compared to the J1. And if you choose the J1, which I did a J1, and obviously, I'm recording this in Kentucky, so I did not go back to Cameroon as a mandatory 2 or 3 year requirement had me to do. There is an exchange program that you can do within the States where you can go into a rural area and they'll grant you then an H1B to work in a rural area under the H1B status, but you're given back those 3 years in the States. And then after the 3 years are over, The fine item there is now you're eligible to become a permanent resident. And then in that process, basically through your work and in your commitment to continue to work in the United States and meet the need in said underserved area or other underserved areas, then you're awarded permanent residency if you qualify.
Look at Dr. Nina breaking it down so it will forever be broke. I love it. Wow. So it's very complicated. So I think, and the reason why I wanted you on the show is obviously to catch up with you, talk to you about this, but also at the same time, like, I think we got to show some love to our IMG grads and just let them know, like, they're going through some stuff. It's very difficult. Not only do you have to survive your program, but you have to figure out how and what your next steps are going to be to remain in the United States, if that's what you want. Or either way, if you decided you want to go back to your home country, it's still a big deal that U.S. grads don't have to worry about.
Yeah, it's something that I wouldn't say envy, but I think envy describes it better, is for our counterparts that we work with or we meet in the workplace. It's just like, oh, it must be so much nicer to not have to deal with this. You know, it definitely is an added bonus to not have to deal with this, to be honest.
True. But there's a certain level of like strength, and like you come through it, like nothing can stop you, you know? And
yeah,
you know, it's funny. It's interesting. I'm actually, me and my wife, we're actually thinking about eventually going overseas to practice, possibly in Ghana, and live there for a little bit. So I don't know if there's going to be an IMG coach for your United States expats in Ghana or whatever country in Africa, but that's my thought process. So that's been, now that I've been doing a lot more research on that, it's made me a little bit more sympathetic to what IMGs coming to the United States have to go through.
Another thing too is, which is talking about going back to Ghana, another way that I found this to be very useful is when I go back to Cameroon, I always find myself in the presence of other physicians there, and you can help them in two ways. One, obviously you can tell them all these things that we're talking about for those who are looking to do this. But for most other people, they also appreciate when you bring back that knowledge and you bring back that exchange of information, especially being able to teach them your surgical skill or teach them things that they're not able to do maybe there as general surgeons that you can do, because you've had this experience here. So there's two ways to look at it. I think I actually applaud that you guys are considering that. And if you do, let me know. Maybe I'll come to Ghana. I'll be more than happy to.
I'm going to put it out there, but listen, we go in August. This is it's not a shameless plug, but this is a straight up plug. Like August 27th to September 11th, I'm going with a group called the International Healthcare Volunteers. We're going to Ghana. We do everything from women's health to internal medicine to surgery, to all the pediatrics. We take a group of about 30, 35 medical professionals. It's physicians, it's pharmacists, it's anybody who wants to come, even medical students and some teenagers. We take them with us and we go and we do some good work. And the thing that I like about it is like exactly what you said, like we go there and they want to work with us and the physicians there would like to work with us. But oftentimes I find out that I learn more from them than I think they're learning from me. The knowledge that they have in these countries are amazing. It's just that the resources, a lot of places, the resources they don't have, like they don't have access to the staplers. They don't have access to the mesh. They don't have access to a lot of the technology that we have, which means that they're even doper. They're even better with their surgical techniques because they ain't got nothing else. So they got to make sure that, you know, whatever hernias that they repair are, this is it, you know? So I find myself learning all of these different things that you only read in textbooks that you don't get a chance to actually practice in the United States. So if you're open to it, come with us. We'll take you with us. If anybody's listening, just go to ihcv.org to learn more. But listen, Dr. Nina, this was dope. Thank you. This was awesome. I love the fact that you own in this space. I respect your grind. I'm just super happy for you. So listen, let the audience know, particularly the IMGs, if this is their first time hearing you or hearing about you, I doubt it, but if they want to get in contact with you, if they want to follow you, if they want to listen to your podcast, they want to know about your courses, tell them how to get in touch with you.
So I think the easiest way is to just type in my name on Google. So
just did you just say Google me?
Yeah. Just Google me and you'll find me, to be honest. And my website is drninaloom.com. So DR, just the abbreviation, DRNINALUM.com. And on there, you get links to my podcast. I have free eBooks for you to sign up for. I have free lists. People want lists of like, what programs take IMGs? Well, you find it on there. I have a free list for you to download. I have other resources, like my links to my Instagram is on there. It's the same Dr. Nina Loom. My links to my courses are on there as well. So I feel like if you just put that in the internet, you'll find that website and then it'll link you to all the different things that I'm up to. My YouTube link is on there as well. So guys, just get right into it. Just type it in your little browser and you'll be able to find me.
Dr. Nina, help me with my SEO because it looks like your SEO is off the chain. So I appreciate that, yo. But once again, congratulations on your engagement. I think that's pretty dope that you thanked your fiance on the show. You know, make sure he's a subscriber to Docs Outside the Box.
Yeah, I didn't tell him, Mr. Chick, you better get your subscription. He listens to podcasts. I'll make sure he listens to this one.
Make sure he downloads Docs Outside the Box and subscribes and leaves a review. Make sure he leaves a review. Five stars.
He needs to leave a five-star review. Five-star review. Five-star no reviews.
Hey, five-star reviews. That's what we want, yo. That's what we want. And that's what we need.
Yeah.
And everybody listening, make sure you find out and subscribe to Dr. Nina's podcast. Leave her a five-star review. Like I said, five-star reviews is like gold for us, yo. We need that. All right. Yeah. It helps us to be a little bit more discoverable on all the different podcast sites. And it just makes it easier for people to find out about us. So, Dr. Nina, we got to do this again. If I get any more questions that are sent directly to me, will you come on the show and help me answer them?
Absolutely. I'll be more than happy to do that.
All right, bet. Thank you again.
Very welcome. Thank you for having me on your show. It's such a great opportunity, and I mean it. It is a great opportunity.